Welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. It is our intention to continue offering these audio recordings free of charge. However, if you would like to donate to support our cause in keeping our facility open in Nashville, you can do so via the Venmo app by sending a donation to @WildHeartNashville, or you can find us online at our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, and click the Donate tab. So this morning I wanted to speak on the topic of compassion. Compassion as a radical act. Compassion as a courageous act. And I think that's the word that comes to mind the most when I think about compassion. My experience with doing this practice is courage. The etymology of the word courage actually means, it literally translates to mean of the heart, and its Latin root of the heart. And I looked into it this morning because I wanted to see if there are some other etymological roots to the word. And I found that courage also means the seat of feelings. I have to be honest, when I first read that, the seat of feelings, I was like, what the hell does that mean? And the first thing that crossed my mind, the seat of feelings, it literally means sitting with that shit. Like sitting in your feelings, sitting in it, sitting with it, sitting through it. That's what courage means. Being with our feelings. And you know, it just reminded me that the Buddha didn't embark on an easy path. I mean, this dude was an ascetic. You know, he left his house. He renounced all of his possessions. And ultimately, he resolved to sit with himself under the Bodhi tree. This is the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. And as he did so, as he sat with himself under the Bodhi tree, the darkest and most disturbing parts of the Buddha's psyche came to visit him. And what a radical act, you know, what a courageous act to sit with oneself for, in the story, I think it's something like 7 days, 7 nights. And as he sat with himself, the darkest and most disturbing parts of his psyche came to visit. Greed, hatred, and delusion. These are called the three poisons. And they were deified as this demonic force in the mythological story called Mara. So the devil came to visit the Buddha while he sat under the Bodhi tree. And the interesting thing here is that the Buddha didn't cast Mara away. Right, this is actually a central insight in the Buddha's teaching, is that hatred doesn't cease by hatred, but by love alone is healed. Right, that's the saying. He didn't cast these parts of himself away. He didn't try to hate himself into being a better person. You know, he actually didn't take these things personally at all. He saw their impermanent and impersonal nature, that they were purely of habit, of the animal body and brain to try to protect itself, the greed, the possessiveness, the scarcity, the lust, the hatred, the resentment, the anger, the blame, you know, hating pain, hating discomfort in his knees, I'm sure, as he was sitting there for 7 days, the delusion that these weren't personal things, that they were just born into the system, the body, mind. So he didn't resist them. He didn't cast them away, but he did something very radical. He embraced them. He sought to use as the tool for freeing himself from the suffering of his mind, wisdom and compassion as the tool, not resistance. And this is an interesting thing, I think, also as a religion. Buddhism's interesting because we don't really cast out the devil in Buddhism. We turn towards it. You know, we embrace it. we kind of see it as nature, really, interestingly enough. And Carl Jung says, we don't awaken by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. You know, really, I think the spiritual path from the Buddhist context, the Buddhist understanding, is to really confront and embrace what the Buddha calls dukkha, human suffering. And I love that Carl Jung says we don't awaken by imagining figures of light. You know, it's not that we're trying to bypass our pain and suffering, but we're really trying to make it conscious, to bring it into our awareness, to sit with it. And I think that takes courage. I think it takes compassion. Every time greed, hatred, and delusion would visit the Buddha, this demonic force that we call Mara, which is really just the deification of his own mind, every time it would visit the Buddha would just simply say, "I see you, Mara. I see you, Mara." Compassion is a courageous willingness to meet pain without resistance, to meet difficulties, challenges, grief, emotions without resistance, embracing and opening to them with understanding and with care. And in the ancient texts after the Buddha's enlightenment, Mara would continue to visit the Buddha. And I find this to be really interesting because they could have just left that out, you know, but it seemed to be important to convey something about the fact that greed, hatred, and delusion continued to visit the Buddha throughout his life after his enlightenment. And I think this really smashes kind of our Western ideals of what enlightenment might be like, this kind of pure and perfected state. You know, this kind of like puritanical perspective, I think, that we have sometimes in the West, Western religion. And the fact of the matter is that Mara kept coming to the Buddha. Greed, hatred, and delusion. And what this tells me, I think different people interpret it differently, but for me, it means that we never arrive at a place in our life without pain. The Buddha had back pain after his enlightenment. The Buddha died of dysentery. He was constantly handling conflicts. If you read the Pali Canon, it's basically the Buddha just dealing with the most annoying people for, you know, 10 Bibles worth of pages. So we never arrive at a place without pain. So long as we exist in this world has this quality of dukkha. And maybe in a sense, maybe that through enlightenment, we're not born again into this world. That's kind of how I see it. And you don't have to have that belief to engage in the practices that the Buddha taught. But so long as we're in this world, even if we're enlightened, whatever that means, right, we're going to be experiencing pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame. The Chinese Buddhists say 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. The perfection of the Buddha's enlightenment wasn't a complete absence of pain. It was instead of a complete ability to soften and be open to the pain and suffering in the world without resisting it. Does that make sense? So it's not the absence of struggle, but it's really a complete ability to soften around it without resistance. And at that point, maybe what's true is that pain is no longer pain if there's no resistance. You know, and so maybe the perfection of enlightenment is that if we can meet pain with compassion, that there's just nature at that point. For those of us that have been on the path for a while, we can take the Buddha's story of how Mara continued to visit him as an example of how we should practice. We never get to stop opening to the suffering. You know, we never get to rest. Because sometimes it can really feel like we're making no progress here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking to some of the folks that maybe been meditating for a couple years, you know, in recovery for a few years. Whatever your path is, it doesn't just have to be Buddhism. Like, when you committed for a while to something, sometimes it's like, man, the breakups are still coming. You know, the financial insecurity still takes the wind out of our sails. You know, the grief, the loss, death, conflict, friendships, ending. You know, they still come. We can't spiritually bypass nature. We can't outsmart nature. No amount of Buddhist practice is going to allow us to escape nature. The Buddha saying is something very radical. He's saying, no, this is exactly how it is. Pleasure, pain, gain, loss, praise, blame. Impermanence, the arising and passing away. I've heard it said by Stephen Batchelor that there are no straight lines in nature. You know, there's this crookedness, there's this wildness. That's why we call ourselves wild heart. You know, my goal for my practice is not a state of perfection. It's to be more able to soften and open to all of it, the pleasure and the pain, without attachment, without resistance. So I want to read a quote by an author named Jeff Brown. I think he just does a really great job of bringing this point home. He says, it's not about letting it go. It's about letting it in. It's about letting it in deep. It's about letting it through. It's about being true to your feelings. It's about giving your experiences the attention they deserve. And that may take a moment, or it may take years. The trick is not to shame your need to hold on to what is yet to be resolved. Let it go is the mantra of the self-avoidant, feigning resolution because they lack the courage or the preparedness to face their feelings. Let's not play that game. Let's let things in. Let's let things through. Let's let things have their time until they are fully and truly ready to shift. Let's let it grow into the transformation at its heart. We write our story by fully living it, not by letting it go before its time. And so what this tells me is that, you know, we let go of our agenda for our pain. You know, we let go of our pushing for resolution and we just show up for it as it is and let it have its time. It's trusting the process. And the beauty of this essential truth of impermanence is that everything that arises will pass away. And there's oftentimes so little that we need to do in our pain to resolve it. Now, don't get me wrong, there's engaged Buddhism, you know what I mean? There's activism, there's an essential need to act. But I really believe that through this practice, the first step is about being honest about the suffering that we experience and really coming into a willingness to be present with it. The action naturally arises from compassion, I feel like. And in Buddhism, in the Buddha's discourses, there are two different words for compassion. One is this more willingness to be with, which is called karuna. And one is this more active compassion that's engaged in activities, which is called anukampa. And karuna, when translated, literally means a movement of the heart in response to pain. It's about embodying it, sitting with it. You know, as Jeff Brown says, fully living the pain, letting it in deep, not by letting it go before its time, right? To really sit with, that's karuna. And then anukampa, when literally transmitted, means crying out at the crying of another. It means doing something about it. So both of these things we keep in balance. And I think what's so radical about the Buddha's teaching, you know, we're doers. We're a very productive society. This second one, I think, comes a little bit easier. You know, when I'm suffering, I think, well, what can I do about it? Don't you? That's usually my first thought is, well, what can I do to fix it? This first one's much harder for me, which is always the last option on the table, which is, oh, Andrew, maybe you should sit with that pain for a moment and have some compassion and understanding for it. Last thing I ever want to do, still to this day. I hate to admit it, but it's true. So we balance this karuna, this compassion of sitting with, and this anukampa, which is this courageous action to, you know, free ourselves from the causes and conditions of the suffering. In the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha doesn't just say to be compassionate. He's not very much an authoritarian type of spiritual teacher. I don't know if you've noticed that in his teachings. The Buddha's kind of like a jerk a little bit. He's like, yeah, suffering is something that you're experiencing and you can do something about it or not. That's up to you. You know, he's kind of like giving us full permission to allow ourselves the freedom to suffer if we want to suffer, you know? And he's not even going to really tell you that you should do anything otherwise, but he's going to offer some instructions, some practices. So he doesn't tell us, be compassionate. He says, if you want to experience the freedom that I have, you need to practice inclining your mind, cultivating compassion in the citta. And citta in Buddhism means heart-mind. The Buddha places a really big emphasis on this idea of inclining, inclination. You know, oftentimes, I know when I got introduced to these heart practices in Buddhism, I was just like, man, it feels so phony and fake. I don't feel compassionate. So sitting here and trying to practice being compassionate when I don't feel like it feels very inauthentic. And this is what I've heard referred to as the myth of authenticity. Is we often feel like we have to feel something in order for it to be authentic. But the Buddha is saying, if you're just waiting around until you feel like being compassionate, that's not going to be enough to go against the stream of greed, hatred, and delusion in the mind. We have to really actively cultivate it. And that sometimes it's a dry practice, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's just like fake it till you make it kind of thing. You know, like what happens in the body when I try to love myself? When I say, I feel you, I care for you, I'm here for you. You know, there's resistance in the body sometimes, sure. You know, sometimes there's the felt sense of love and compassion. Sometimes it's very dry. You're just kind of saying the phrases and nothing's really happening. But it's all a part of the practice. So the Buddha teaches these as the four Brahmaviharas, which are called the four sublime states or sublime attitudes. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upekkha. Got the shameless plug for the Wild Heart shirt. Metta, mudita, karuna, upekkha. Metta is loving kindness, goodwill. Karuna is compassion. Mudita is appreciative joy, gratitude. And upekkha is equanimity. And I know many of y'all have heard this many times, you know, but I love reading the sutta, the Metta Sutta. Because I think the Buddha actually is very clear here that he's not asking you to be compassionate. He's actually going to tell you how to practice compassion. And he starts off the sutta. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read the beginning. He starts it off by literally saying, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened by duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and safety, may all beings be at ease. And then he says, whatever living beings there may be, whether they're weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Buddha's not really fucking around. You know, he's giving us no escapes. He's not saying like, well, these people that are causing all of this violence and harm and oppression, like, you can hate them, you know? You can really turn your heart into bundle of resentment and blame here, you know? And he's also not telling us that we lose wisdom. He's not saying that we condone violence, but that we really have to practice this radical turning towards compassion. You know, that suffering does not cease by more suffering. Hatred does not cease by more hatred. It just doesn't. That it's only through love and through wisdom. The foundation of the four Brahmaviharas is goodwill, is metta. And when experiencing pain, metta turns into compassion. So compassion is really the wise response to pain, which we're about to talk about more fully here in a moment. At the foundation is metta, is goodwill. And when goodwill meets pleasant experiences, joyful experiences, it turns into appreciative joy, gratitude. And the heart quality of equanimity is kind of like the babysitter for these other three. So there's metta, there's compassion, there's gratitude for pleasure, compassion towards pain. There's goodwill for all beings. And equanimity is this part that's kind of keeping everything in balance. It's really the wisdom of non-attachment, right? Because sometimes when we care, when we have compassion, our compassion can turn into pity or despair. Or sometimes our compassion can try to fix someone's pain instead of be present with it. You know, it can turn into codependency. So obviously the devil's in the details, right? Mara lives in the details here. It's not so easy just to say to be compassionate, but these near enemies can sometimes arise. What feels like compassion maybe has some clinging in it. I need to fix you. I need to change you. You know, maybe it's despair. I start to get caught in the hopelessness that you feel or that I feel. And that's not maybe exactly what the balancing of compassion is. But compassion without attachment, which we're going to talk about here in a moment, equanimity helps us to have that discernment. And with appreciative joy, with meeting the pleasant experiences in our life, equanimity helps us to balance that so we don't get caught in this clinging to pleasure, this addiction to pleasure. Non-attached appreciation. It's like appreciating a moment of joy with an open hand. A capacity to take active delight in something in all of its temporariness. So these are the four Brahmaviharas. Metta, mudita, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Goodwill or loving kindness. Compassion. Gratitude or sympathetic joy. Appreciative joy. And equanimity. These are the instructions that the Buddha gave. You know, to practice compassion is to know that our common reactions to pain, aversion, avoidance, resentment, although understandable, are not necessary. They're extra. They're what the Buddha calls the second arrow. You know, and of course, we naturally hate pain. We hate conflict. None of us are going to wake up tomorrow being Buddhist and be like, oh yeah, I'm welcoming it all. You know what I mean? Like, that's still always going to probably be some level of impulse, maybe until the moment you reach enlightenment. But we're always going to have this resistance to pain, this desire to avoid it, this discomfort. And really what the Buddha's teaching is that we can turn towards it and caring is enough. We don't have to create the extra story. We don't have to fix or manage or control situations to our liking. Easier said than done. But I really do feel like compassion is about subtraction and it's not about addition. It's not about doing more, it's about doing less when we're in pain. I always come back to this mantra, this phrase, that caring is enough. And I try to remind myself of that when I'm having a hard time. It's been a fucking heavy year, you know? And there have been moments where I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to make it out of this thing. You know, depression, social isolation. For me, I just was like, the only thing I've been doing really is working, spending time with my family. So I just threw myself into work and that didn't work, you know? So I had to like pull back and just be like, all right, man, what's going on in here? And just remembering, caring is enough. All I need to do is really sit there with that. And the solution arises naturally from that place. That's been my experience. I'd be interested to hear, maybe that's a prompt we can talk about later. It's like, you know, do you feel like solutions naturally arise when you're willing to sit with the pain that you're feeling? Or do you sometimes have to, like, go find them? Four aspects of compassion. This isn't something the Buddha taught, but it's just something that I found to be true when I do this practice, is really compassion encompasses four things. The first being understanding. We have to really be honest about the ways that we suffer. We have to be authentic and honest about the fact that we suffer. One of the greatest gifts of being a therapist is it's given me a lot of confidence that I'm never alone in my suffering. You know, that no matter what type of background people have, that everyone suffers. And that actually, to me, feels very nurturing, you know, to know that I'm not alone, that actually it's a common bond of our human condition. All of us will have to deal with aging and illness and death. All of us will deal with loss. All of us will get things that we want and get things we don't want. And we have to just be honest about it, share about it. You know, it's like 101, Sangha, community. Hey, y'all, I'm suffering. My name's Andrew, and I'm suffering about shit. How are you doing? You know, to be open about it, Mr. Rogers says it really well. Anything that is human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can become more manageable. When we talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming and less upsetting. Anything that's human is mentionable. Anything that's mentionable can become more manageable. This is what the Buddha says in the First Noble Truth. Do you notice that you suffer? And if you do, you're not alone. You know? We often feel that when life is difficult or painful or uncertain, it should be otherwise. And this is really where that unnecessary suffering comes in, is this reactivity. We try to deny ourselves the pain. We try to avoid it. We try to hide it from ourselves. You ever notice that? I do that shit all the time. It's like I am the one that's doing these avoidance behaviors because I'm the one that doesn't want to know how much pain I'm in. And so we get this reactivity and we get caught in our habits, the groove of, you know, if anything, the pandemic has taught me just how strong it is, like how quickly I can get caught in the Netflix trap, you know, or the social media trap, or whatever the fuck it is, it doesn't matter. I'll take it all. The world just is like a buffet of options. It's great. So, you know, a lot of that is to try to really move away from what I feel inside. And the reality is that there's nothing to hide. There's no shame in suffering. It's the most human thing we can experience. So this is understanding, is one aspect of compassion. The second is empathy. So as we're starting to acknowledge and be honest about the ways that we struggle, you know, we can start to feel with it. We can start to be willing to, this is really the part of compassion where we allow ourselves to feel what we've been experiencing. You know, we're honest about it, which is like naming it, and then we allow ourselves to feel the weight of that in the body. You know, how is this? I felt isolated lately. Okay, where do you feel that in the body? What is that like? You know, the Buddha teaches about this quality of human consciousness called citta, and citta is the affective sense. It's the part of us that's impacted and affected by life. It's the sensitive heart. And that's happening whether we're in touch with that part or not, you know? And some of us, I know for myself, it's like years of active drug and alcohol addiction. I did a lot of great work to try to keep that shit, you know, pretty guarded, well protected, well defended. And what we're being asked to do here is to really lay down the sword and the shield, you know, to like come back into that place. And the Buddha says to re-inhabit it. He refers to the heart, the sensitivity of humanness, as like an ancient ruin that we need to excavate and re-inhabit. We need to live in that place of feeling again. The body and feeling are all the Buddha talks about. This liberation through embodiment, through coming into the sense of feeling what it's like to be in that experience. Empathy. But empathy is also the most misunderstood aspect of compassion, because empathy is often mistaken for compassion. It's not enough to just feel the pain and the suffering. We also have to have some equanimity, which is the third quality, which is we want to be able to feel the pain and the suffering we experience without getting lost in it, without getting overcome by the story that the pain is telling. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? The story that the pain tells? Very powerful. The three from my depression era, it's my depression phase. I've always felt this way. I'm always going to feel this way, and I'm the only one that feels this way. It was my depression stories. The pain that I felt was so unbearable. I felt like I was the only one, and I was always going to feel this way, and that... what is it? I've always felt this way, always going to feel this way, and I'm the only one that feels this way. So those are the stories, and equanimity helps us to be present with the pain, with the feeling, without becoming lost in what we feel. Not getting lost in self-pity, not getting lost in despair. And this is a practice. It's not like that's not going to happen, but it's like those are the near enemies of compassion. Self-pity and despair, or pity and despair. So equanimity helps us to understand that there's pain and suffering, to allow ourselves to sit with it, and then to not get too lost in it. And here's where I bring in the fourth part, which is the balancing factor, is really compassion is all a wish for freedom. Compassion is a hopeful practice. Bhikkhu Anālayo says this in his book, Compassion and Emptiness. He says that compassion should take freedom as its object of reflection. Compassion should take freedom as its object for reflection. So that means I feel you, I care for you, and may I be free from this suffering. I may not be able to resolve it. Caring is enough. But I wish to be free. I wish for freedom.